Bandwidth for December has been provided by CashFly, the fastest, most reliable CDN in the business. CashFly delivers all of our content here at 5x5, and they are the best. Check them out at cashfly.com, CACHEFLY, and let them know that you heard about them here on 5x5. I'm recording.
I press the podcast button.
Here we go. 3, 2, 1. We recorded this episode on December 1st, 2015. This is On the Grid, episode 144. This week, Dane couldn't make it, but Andy and I recorded a special holiday episode about tradition and Andy's secret plans for public office. Here we go.
It's launch day. Launch day is so exciting. Oh, how I love launch day. I'm finally unclenching all of the muscles in my body after clenching them nonstop for 2 days. And everything went well. Nothing broke. There was some meta tag messed up on Facebook. That was the biggest problem, which is, in the grand scheme of things, basically not even a problem. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. You mentioned last week something which I actually kind of wanted to return to, which is this idea of just feeling complete ownership over something that you really have no control over, which is totally my sort of space on a launch like this.
Which is both great and paralyzing.
You know, I think it makes you do good work, as you mentioned. I think it's good to have to care. Ultimately, I choose to care over not to care. Mm-hmm. I could have a job I didn't care about, as we've also discussed, but I would rather care about something. And so I was in the position, you know, where like things had to get done and I couldn't do them. And I basically had to sit there and cheer people on and help them as much as I could and Google things and try and learn new things to get things finished. And it's a very interesting place to be. And I do think I had no reason to be nervous, really. We've done this before. We've done this before for sites that have gotten, you know, an order of magnitude more traffic. No slight to Tobias, but you know, sites that are a more mass appeal. I think he's in sort of a very specific niche. We've done it for sites that were bigger. We've done it for sites that were more complicated, and we really have never had a big problem on a launch of a project. So we've done it enough times that there's really no reason to be nervous at all. We tested it very thoroughly. You're always kind of sweating these little details that you notice are wrong. And ultimately, you know, 0.001% of the people looking at the thing are actually going to notice that little thing is wrong. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of giving your user a little bit too much credit. And most people just kind of go, wow, pretty, for 3 seconds and then leave.
Yep.
So, you know, all these things, no reason to actually be nervous. And yet, as I mentioned on Twitter, I did bite off all my fingernails. I was doing so good. I had gone so long without doing it.
I would like to, by the way, you haven't even said what you launched. Hey, Andy, what did you launch today?
We launched a new website for Tobias Fair Jones, prominent type designer and all around nice guy. And it's his first release since HNFJ, which all of the media outlets seem to be very focused on. But he's kind of starting a new foundry with sort of some new principles. And this is his first release, which is a typeface called Mallory. And it is beautiful. I've been working with it for months. You all should go buy it because it is really, truly great. And I'm having a hard time not using it for every project now because I'm so familiar with it and it is so good. So it was a very exciting project for us. And we launched it today. And I am just now showered and sitting in my robe and my sweatpants after a launch day.
Have you ever launched something that is as significant within your own little design community? Is that part of why so nervous and no fingernails?
I think that's part of it, for sure. I would say no, probably. If you had gone back in time to when I was a student and told me that I would get to design Tobias Fair Jones' website, I'd be like, no, that's too cool. The only other thing was, we did the app for Nick Felton, too. Nick was a big role model of mine when I was a student. Mm-hmm. And so if you told me we'd get to work with him, that also would have been a big deal. So that was also a big deal. But I barely worked on that project directly, honestly. So I guess not as much ownership there. But I think that was a big part of it. And it was just, I cannot explain my headspace from the past 2 days. It was so, so unbelievably stressed out. And I do not consider myself to be an anxious person. And again, as we discussed, really had no reason to be concerned because we did all of our due diligence and we were very confident everything was going to go well, and it did, and yet couldn't really get around that. It's a lot of anxiety, which isn't atypical for me. I think that Hillary gets mad because she thinks I'm anxious about the things that make no sense to be anxious about. I mean, I'm never anxious about the things she thinks I should be anxious about. I'm always like, yeah, whatever, that's fine. I strive to never be anxious. So it's not like there's a moment where I'm like, this anxiety. I mean, I guess, all right. So anxiety that I think is relevant. If I am in the woods at night and I hear some growling around me, I'm going to go ahead and call that some useful anxiety. If I'm biking through the city and somebody tries to run me off the road, I'm gonna call that some useful stress, some useful adrenaline. But like, you know, stuff around something like this, I really shouldn't be anxious. But these are the kind of things where like I invest myself so much in them that I can't not be anxious about it, I guess.
I don't agree that you shouldn't be. Why shouldn't you be? Because there's so many things that could go wrong. Maybe I'm just relating.
Yeah, but there's always so many things that could go wrong, right?
Yeah.
And there's nothing to say that something is, well, I mean, I guess launch day something is a little more likely to go wrong than any other day, but this site is now going to be live forever. So should I be anxious every day that something could go wrong with the website? That could be, but...
But you're anxious because there's so many eyeballs on it at one time, and if anyone's going to mention anything at any given time, it's going to be today. And then after that, it just dissipates.
Yeah, but I shouldn't care that much about what people think. That's not a great trait, I don't think.
Then what? Who are you designing for if you don't care about what your users think?
I care about what people feel, which I don't think can really be measured. The people that are going to say something on Twitter, 95% of the time, don't really care about those people. You know, especially if someone is going to say something without any respect for understanding what goes into making the thing before them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there were no... I did... watch Twitter all day anxiously, and there were no negative comments about the website, really. There were a few people that were like, had a problem with Tobias's pricing, and it's like, okay, you just don't understand how this works, clearly, so please go home, Twitter troll. But yeah, so usually I'm not designing for those people, certainly, at least I hope not. I feel like I'm designing for the people that wouldn't say something, I guess. I don't know. I'm designing for Tobias so he can sell his font.
Fair enough. That's very fair.
I don't know how best to, like, I feel like maybe in 20 years I'll have decent perspective on this, but right now I'm in it, so I don't really. But my relationship to the work that I'm doing is very strong in that I'm basically never in a bad mood unless I'm unhappy with the work that I'm producing for whatever reason, either because the project is bad, the circumstances are bad, or because I am just failing to meet my own standards or meet my own sort of expectations for something. Mm-hmm. That will just put me in like generally a sour... ennui that I just can't shake, and it will carry with me for weeks outside of the office, outside of work, in the rest of my life. You know, that is a thing that only ever comes from work. You know, other kinds of things in my life will never make me feel that way in a way that permeates everything else. I'll be able to like logic myself out of it. So there's that. And then I think there's a big part of my identity wrapped up in what I do, which... Yeah, obviously when you feel like you're on the line, then that increases the anxiety. Like, something tells me that you don't really see your identity in things you own from a conversation we've had in the past. If all your clothes got ruined, you wouldn't be like, well, I'm not me anymore. You'd be like, okay, I go get new clothes, mm-hmm. I'll buy new pants, buy new shirts, whatever. But, you know, if you do something poorly, or if you feel like you've failed to do your job, I would feel like I fundamentally, as me, as Andy, failed, and I'm no longer... the person I thought I was, in a way. So yeah, I think that's probably where it comes from, is a combination of like, A, being really invested in it in the sense that I care about it on an emotional level more than I should, probably, or more than makes sense, more than is productive, let's put it that way. And B, it's a big part of like what I identify myself as. Like, my value in the world is what I do, I guess, primarily. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. That's why. It still feels... misplaced. Like, I would be better at my job if I could just be calm about it and still do the same work and just not, you know, be shaking my leg constantly for 2 days straight, which is what I did.
I wonder if those things have to go hand in hand, though. If you didn't have one thing, could you have the other? If you were never anxious about anything and then somebody said, hey Andy, quick, we gotta go get this thing done, wouldn't you be like, I'm not worried about it?
You don't have someone in your life that's like that? My coworker Dan is just like that. He never shows any signs of pressure, stress, or anxiety. He just does what has to get done. And he even, like, he does it all kind of at the same sort of comfortable pace. Even if, like, something is dire and needs to get done, he'll be like, all right, I'll just go and type, 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 and fix what needs to get fixed. And everything gets done on time. He does everything, you know, perfectly. But never is he in, like, panic mode. And, you know, I certainly tried not to communicate panic mode at all to anybody. But that was my internal... biochemical things were giving me. So yeah, I don't know. I know people like that, and I admire it greatly, to be able to be like cool and collected and just know that, hey, me being stressed out about X is not going to make it any better. I just need to do what I can do, and, you know, that's all I have.
Sounds pretty good. I guess I know people like that. Seems like a hard way to be. Well, that's probably actually probably significantly easier way to be.
It seems hard to be a dog.
It seems hard to transform into a dog.
Just kidding. Seems great to be a dog. That would be awesome.
We didn't mention that Dan's not here today.
Oh!
And it's not a joke this time.
All right, Dan's not here and it's not a joke.
Well, no, it wasn't a joke either last time. He was
late. I'm sure it was. It was
this
definitely
time,
a joke
just straight
last time.
Straight up not here at all.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't a joke that he was playing on us. It was a thing that we were trying to spin into something optimistic and fun to kind of control our anger.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way of putting it.
Really
today is legit. But it also
rage.
Brings up the fact that he hasn't yet listened to it, or at least I'm pretty sure he hasn't listened to that episode because he hasn't brought it to my attention.
Yeah. I think he would have said something if he had listened
to it. So I think we have to wait another week to find out if he ever hears it, what he thinks about it, if he ever listens to it, if someone else brings it to his attention. Be interesting.
Maybe we should just refuse to discuss with him outside of the podcast itself.
So, yeah, that's okay.
He Slack messages us about it, and you just go, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean? And then we just, next week, when he's back,
behold,
it'll be a rush of emotion.
It might not be that rush of emotion. It might just be, I see what you did. I thought you were doing that.
That's a pretty good Dan impression.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he's here with us. I got a Christmas tree this weekend.
A real Christmas tree?
I did. I got a real Christmas tree.
I actually bought a Christmas tree too, but I bet it's different than the kind that you got.
Well, we decided to get a Fraser fir after looking at, you know, the conkler fir and the white pine and the blue spruce. We decided that a Fraser fir was really the tree that fit our lifestyle and our brand.
Did you want to get a tree?
Yeah, I actually want to talk about this.
I want to know, because I bet you can probably guess whether I'm pro or anti-tree, but I was wagering a guess that you might be anti-tree, and maybe you're not.
I feel like people would have guessed that, which is why I'm interested to discuss it, because I do think it's a little bit of a conflict of my my traditional views.
It makes no sense to me why you would be pro-tree.
So why would I be anti-tree?
It's kind of frivolous.
Mm-hmm.
You're not at all religious.
Yep.
And trees, while they're not really Christian, they're tied to Christmas.
Yep. His name is right in the name. His name
sure.
is in the name, you know.
You probably don't like killing a tree for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is more hassle than you would expect.
Mm, yep.
If you didn't believe any of the above, I don't know why you would bother with all the hassle.
Yeah. You pretty much nailed it. Those are all the reasons why I can think.
Also, sometimes, Andy, I just say what I think about stuff, and then sometimes you agree. So that works, too.
Oh, those are just all the things you think about trees?
Mm-hmm.
Can we just sub that out for Matt thinks this about Christmas trees?
Sure, if you want to do that.
Yeah, no, I think those are very legitimate. The only one I would push back on, I don't think it's a hassle, but I like the hassle. Like, there's a lot of things in my life that are a hassle that I kind of put them there intentionally because I like a little bit of a hassle sometimes.
I'll tell you this about the hassle, though. The hassle may not be what you think it is. It's not necessarily the getting of it. It's cleaning pine needles out of your house every single day.
Ah, see, it's right by the front door. I thought about this.
I guess you don't have a pet that also exacerbates the problem. So
no, I don't have a cat that's going to be constantly at war with the tree.
I have one of those.
That will not happen. Yeah, so, I mean, the biggest one for me is, like, the cutting down of a, like, live, totally A-OK, out there in the world, you know, photosynthesizing, producing oxygen forest tree, and putting it in your house for, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yeah.
And then disposing of it, which seems, like you said, frivolous, wasteful, not environmentally friendly, and just, you know, overall, just very silly. I like to think of myself, I try in my life to look at humans with a little bit of a distance sometimes and go, what is it that we as mammals are doing on this planet? And the thing that we as mammals are doing, which is cutting down trees, putting tinsel on them for 4 days, and then all throwing them out en masse, is a very strange thing for animals to do.
Yeah, I like to think of that way too. Like, sometimes I ask myself, what would an alien think of the situation?
Yep. So that's the biggest thing for me, is it seems crazy. So the flip side of the coin is that I just love it. I just think it's great. I love the smell of the pine tree in the house. I love trees, so having one in my house is a plus. If there was like, you know, I have lots of other potted plants in the house that are basically little trees I have in there all year round. I'm a big fan of plants, like having them around. I like decorating a tree, it makes me feel warm and fuzzy. Gives me, you know, fun memories about my childhood. And it just seems, I really like rituals and traditions. And I really like things that help me mark the passage of time. And for me, like, it's why I love the seasons, right? Like, I really love living on the East Coast, having a discernible spring and summer and fall and winter, and having, like, little things you do at those times you don't do other times, so you can, like, look forward to those things, and you have, like, you know, little rituals and traditions that kind of keep time moving forward for you. That's something I value a good bit. I don't really know why.
The beard growing and slowly shaving back into not a beard situation.
Exactly. That's another perfect example of, like, a thing I'm trying to start doing, which is, like, a little ritual, a little thing that just kind of marks the passage of time. Ah, yes, look how long my beard is there. It must have been this time of year. That seems meaningful to me in a way.
It sounds like you're just constructing an alibi. Should you?
Well, the beard doesn't fit, sir. So as you see, I couldn't have been burning down that Walmart. So yeah, I just like it. And thinking about it more, I think you can make a pretty good case that whatever environmental weirdness or negative effect there is to cutting down a tree and putting it in your house for 4 weeks and then getting rid of it,
yeah,
is probably completely minimal compared to, like, you know, burning the coal to make the electricity that runs my house, and the taking one flight on a cross country, you know, big jet plane with all the jet fuel and all that kind of stuff. Like, I feel like the environmental impact is probably basically none. And also, I'm going to cut it up and use it for firewood, so I'm going to, you know, full circle this thing. It'll be great. So, like, I was kind of able to talk myself out of that. Like, you know, it seems silly, but in the grand scheme of things, everything is silly. All of civilization is silly and preposterous. So, you know, what is this little piece of, this little cherry on top of the ridiculous cake? And yeah, so I guess the habit thing is big for me. Do you have like rituals? Do you value ritual and habit? I feel like you might be a person that's kind of skeptical of, like,
I don't think, I definitely don't value tradition. That would be the way I probably started.
Where do you draw the line between tradition and habit and ritual?
Tradition would be a thing that happens over many, many years. Like, the same thing every year seems like a tradition, whereas a ritual seems like a daily thing. And a habit seems like a drug problem.
Well, I mean, a habit could also be, like, you know, making your bed every morning.
I know, I'm kidding.
Or flossing every night.
I don't know the difference between a habit and a ritual. I do know the difference between a ritual and a tradition.
A tradition is just lengths of time. It has happened for longer?
No, longer periods of time in between.
Oh, so you can't have, like, a daily tradition.
No, that
doesn't
silly.
Make any sense. I think the difference is the scale of, like, I think a ritual or a habit is just confined to you, right? I don't think a habit is a thing that, like, you know, you could share, really. Like, you have your own habits and rituals. Rituals, I guess, you could share with, like, a small group of people. But traditions are things that are, like, generations, right? Or, like, I think at least plural generations, or at least something that involves spanning multiple generations. Like, I think a family can have a tradition if it involves children. I don't know if you use, like, I don't know if, like, a person can have a tradition. Maybe a couple could have a tradition.
I think in general. So in general, I probably don't like traditions and rituals as much as you do, nor do I think I have nearly as many.
What's your beef with tradition? Just because it's been happening for a long time and you're a skeptical, salty designer?
I think I feel like I came up being skeptical of every tradition that I saw, so I didn't really see the need to copy them or establish new ones. I saw it as, like, here's all the bad stuff that was happening before. The only reason it continues is because it was happening the year before and the year before that and the year before that. So this doesn't seem great. Like, I think I tied my understanding of tradition to bad things happening over and over again.
So you're basically saying that traditions are inherently bad because they have this little, like, system that is cheating them into continuing to happen, whether they would happen or not, right?
Right. Like, there's let's not examine this. Let's just do it because it's always been done.
That's the best.
And things
way to
like
say
that are really scary. So rather than have a tradition, I would be totally fine with doing a thing 1 year and then next year deciding, is this the right thing to do, or does it make no sense at all? And I'd rather live my life that way than the opposite way.
Thanksgiving is a perfect example of one of the stupidest traditions, which is the tradition of everybody cook a turkey, because A, turkey is not that good. I'm just going to say it. It is a subpar poultry, and the biggest reason it's not great is because it's very difficult, if not impossible, for a person to cook a bird that big such that it is evenly cooked through and not overcooked. Every turkey I've ever had that was cooked by a person is overcooked. That's the other thing, is you only cook it once a year. You never practice. No one ever practiced making a turkey. You make it once a year, and then you wait a whole year. You forget everything you learned, if you learned anything at all. And you try and do it again, you screw it up. And then everybody in my family is like, oh, what a great turkey. It's so good. Oh, it's so tasty. And everyone knows it's not tasty. It tastes like leather. It's flavorless and dry. Bad poultry.
I like turkey, but I feel like it's mainly about the things that go around the turkey. You get turkey with the gravy and the cranberry and the stuffing.
You just like those three
turkey
things.
Turkey is just like a boat to hold all the other stuff.
You know, we invented a boat to hold food. It's called a plate.
Yeah, you can't just eat gravy by itself, though. That's gross.
No, you put the gravy on. You put gravy on the stuffing. That's my main move. Anyway, that's an example of a silly tradition. I also have this fundamental cynicism to me, as you know, where I'm always questioning everything. And so,
yeah, that's why I didn't think you liked trees.
I know, because you would think, I would just think that was silly. And you know, ultimately, I feel a little bit silly for, you know, if I like a tree in my house, like why not do it all the time, right? I mean, who cares? I feel a little silly for just falling in line with what everybody else is doing, because this is the time everyone else has a tree in their house. And I truly don't care about Christmas for religious reasons or non-religious reasons. I like marking the end of the year, the passage of time, and it seems like a nice way to do it. I do think there is some value in that. I really like, I'm not planning on having kids anytime soon, but someday I would like to. And one of the biggest reasons I would like to is I feel like having a family, you get this amazing opportunity to invent all kinds of new rituals and habits that didn't exist prior. And this is true, like, of an individual. You can just decide you're going to change something about yourself and go ahead and change it. And I think I do that regularly enough. Like, I think I'm aware of that ability for myself to change my habits and rituals, and I make those changes. But there's only so much potential energy in a single person. And I feel like if there's, you know, a family, parents and a couple kids or whatever, you have this extra opportunity to, you know, have more potential energy in whatever traditions you're building. And I do think, like, that to me, first of all, not to pander to you and make this show about design, but it feels like design, right? Like you're taking a group of people and you're trying to do something that has some positive outcome and figure out how to invent this new thing that doesn't exist. And it's more like an idea, but it's kind of fun to do that. One of our big traditions in the company, because the company is not like a family, so we have one tradition, we have a couple, but the one big tradition every year is we have a Friendsgiving, because we're friends of the web. So we usually do it the Thursday before Thanksgiving, but as a construction, we're doing it Thursday after. Either way, this Thursday is Friendsgiving, which is fun because it's like our kind of end of the year party, and you know, we cook all the food and we host it at the office, and Day makes a big turkey every year and does a pretty good job because he's a really good cook, even though turkey's bad and people shouldn't really make it. And so that's like a fun tradition that we got to kind of invent. And if I know Friendsgiving is kind of an established idea, but you know, the idea that we do that as a company is kind of a fun thing. So that's one of the things I'd be most excited about in terms of like having kids. It's like, all right, now we have a squad and we can invent things for our squad to do. And that'll be so fun. I don't know why I have this affection for those kind of habits, but I mostly like inventing my own new ones.
You just like inventing systems. And then now you're very excited about having a team of people that won't question your systems and will just follow them.
A little bit.
It seems like an army of little Andy soldiers.
I want them to question
all your systems.
I want them to question it for sure. But I do want them to also participate. So they can question it as long as
they're... Well, you want them to participate because they don't have any sort of established idea of what they were supposed to do before.
Well, so I don't think as a parent you have like dominion over your child's thoughts and feelings.
Based on every parent I've ever talked to, way less than you would have expected.
But I do think that up to a certain age, you do have dominion over what they do, right? Like, no, you're six. You're not doing what you want. You're doing whatever I tell you to do because I'm in charge. And so they might not like it, but they can fall in line with the traditions and do whatever it is we're doing. And I would appreciate the challenge of inventing a tradition that I thought was wholesome and interesting and was also something that everyone wanted to do. I don't know. I think it's fun.
Do you just want to take their turkey away and make them eat chicken instead?
Or whatever? Oh, yeah, that's a perfect example. So Thanksgiving in my family, if I ever have children, will not involve turkey. Fuck that. We will have some new dish that we make every year. It'll be a big, maybe it's Thanksgiving pizza. We all get together and we make the dough and we you know, do some pizza making. That could be a thing. I guess here's what it seems like to me. So again, I'm all about the cynicism, and I'm certainly about changing anything that's not working, right? Like I'm not going to be like, well, it's the fourth year of Thanksgiving pizza and everyone fucking hates it and is swearing up and down the house and throwing the pizza dough on the table because they're mad. That would not be a thing I would continue doing. But I think culture is really just a collection of traditions and habits and rituals that are shared by some group of people, right? Yeah. And I think there's value in that. I think there's value in that, like, shared humanity that we are going to agree on something. And for some people, maybe it's something they really love. Some people, maybe they're kind of okay with it, but we're going to meet in the middle and we're going to do this thing together. And that may be, we're going to have a democracy and we're going to elect these people and that's how we're going to work a government. And that might be, we're going to have a neighborhood cleanup day on the first Thursday of every month, or, you know, that could be all sorts of different things. But at every scale, I think that is where the value in those communities comes from. If everyone's just a rogue agent out there doing their own thing and not caring about the people around them and not thinking about how they can participate in the system, then that's a way to live, but it doesn't seem like we're taking full advantage of the human potential. So I guess the exciting thing for me is the idea of kind of starting at, I mean, a small scale of myself. And I do have lots of habits and rituals that I've kind of worked on and more than I'm trying to start. And so I think I've got that going a little bit for me. And then the next kind of scale is relationships or families. And that's kind of an exciting scale because you have more people involved. You get more, it's actually a compromise, right? Like with yourself, there's no compromising. If you want to do something, you do it. If you don't, you don't. But you bring other people in, then you get to kind of try and find something new that fits that system. And you keep on scaling up. I just think that that's where, if not for those things, what is the value of family or a neighborhood or a city or a country?
That's a weird framing of it. I mean, I get it. I totally understand what you're saying. But
why is it weird?
It's you're asking what is the value of those things if not for some sort of repeated behavior. But also you're saying that can change. Like, I don't know. In some ways, that's just everything. It's either like...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
it's either a tradition or... We're deciding that it's not a tradition. We'll just do a different thing every year and just decide what works. And then when it doesn't work, we'll just change it. Like there's part of tradition that is like facing the adversity of things that don't work and just doing it anyway, I think. Or otherwise, you're just, I don't think that's what that means, right?
Well, I guess in kind of a, what's that Christmas movie with...
Right, Steve, they're going to make it Vacation.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
they're going to make it a Wally World.
Or I always think everyone, of... I always think
whether
of,
we enjoy it or not.
I always think of Calvin's dad wanting to go on trips to the lake.
Yeah.
Or go on those like boating trips, the camping trips.
Yeah.
And how the whole family hates him the entire time. And that's like the one joke of every recurring camping trip throughout the entire history of Calvin and Hobbes is how excited he is to go canoeing in the rain and on a morning jog in hail. And the whole family's just like, this is the worst. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I'm much more close to Calvin's dad than I am to Calvin and his mother sitting in the tent.
Yeah, I've remained a Calvin.
Part of my question is, like, where do you draw the line between, you know, like you said, you went home for Thanksgiving. Like, you worked that out. That's a thing that you're doing. And something tells me you're not just doing it because you want to appease your stupid family who's rooted in these dumb traditions and can't break themselves free of that cycle. And, you know, you also get up and put pants on every day before you walk outside. That's something we've agreed on as a culture. You could question that in the summer and say, you know what? I really like to just be ding dong out. It's good. It's hot out there. I would just like to have some air around my business. I just don't know where the line is, right? Because
I don't either. I would like to, like, anytime I've ever been uncomfortable, I want to be like, I don't know why people wear suits to stuff. This seems stupid. I'm just going to wear a t-shirt and jeans and be comfortable. And I'll just let people know that I'm still respectable by telling them so, or like acting in a respectable manner. Why do I have to wear an outfit that shows this? This seems silly. Like the extension of that and everything. I never understand. Like, I hate the idea of like an uncomfortable tradition that I can't break free of just because everyone else has agreed to it, but it doesn't make sense.
But that's the thing, is like your version of make sense is so like structured and cold, honestly. It's a little bit emotionless. I love wearing a suit. It's great. You feel awesome. Don't you feel awesome in a suit?
I don't know.
See, you got to get a suit that fits. You will never feel better looking than when you're in a suit that fits.
That's the thing. Like, what is feel? I don't even necessarily buy into like feels good looking. Very vain, Andy. I don't need to feel good looking.
You should feel good about yourself. You're a beautiful man, and you should feel
that
way every day.
I don't feel bad about myself.
I'm not saying you should not feel bad. I'm saying you should feel good. You should have a positive emotion about yourself sometimes.
See, that idea is weird to me. Like, I think you just feel good about yourself because the world has told you that you look good in a suit because men are supposed to look good in suits, and therefore you feel good about yourself. Like, why can't you just feel good about yourself anyway? What if you're just naked? Could you feel good about yourself?
Yeah, I feel good about myself naked too, but that's for a different episode. I'm just saying, we don't live in a bubble. Like, sure, yeah, like part of it is this, you know, reflection of society's values, but you can't divorce yourself from that, and I'm not going to deprive myself of feeling good when I look good because I'm just like, well, the man, just a fucking institution, man, that said I should look this way. I don't know. Suits are great. And for me, it's like wearing a suit is participating in like a long line of, yeah, tradition. I'll say it. It's like, it's a long line of like history. And there is, for me, a lot of value in being in touch with history. And I'll grant you that, you know, wearing a suit is like grazing the corner of history a little bit. It's not like you're, you know, entrenched in it, but you know, that kind of garment has been around for a long time. It's evolved and changed. And, you know, it's been something that started out in one kind of way and has changed a little bit as it's gone on. But you can look at all sorts of little details of suits and you can figure out, you know, what kind of button pattern was most common in a certain era. It's just like there's a lot of like human history wrapped up in something like that. And frankly, there's not human history wrapped up in a t-shirt. Like the t-shirt, sure, it was invented because it was cheap and easy to make. And we could print stuff on them and when people buy them, even though they're cheap and easy to make. So we can trick them to buying them with things printed on them. And yeah, maybe in 200 years, there'll be some interesting t-shirt history. But right now it's just a newish thing that has none of that richness to it.
Everybody knows in 200 years, everybody's going to be wearing some sort of a silver garment. There's no denim in this future. And then kind of cool sleeves or like shoulder accessories. Yeah, see, you know, everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. I will say, I mean, my hypocritical stance on tradition is that, like, I really like it when it allows me to do the thing I wanted to do anyway, and then everyone else just buys into it.
Mm-hmm, like put a tree in your house.
Thanksgiving is a perfect example where, here's the thing I would like. I would like to take a time, I want to take a period of time off to see my family, and I would also like everybody I'm working with, both fellow employees and also clients, to take the same amount of time off so we can just all agree we're not going to work. That would be really great because it's really hard when you take time off and everybody else is working. That's stressful. Can't we just all agree at a time that we're all going to take off and we just don't have to worry about it? That's what Thanksgiving is. So I like buying into that. That's a great tradition, more because it just allows me to do the things that I want to do and everyone agrees that's acceptable. And so, I mean, that's kind of in the same way that any sort of like agreed cultural idea, if you're trying to get a message across and you just use the same language that everybody else has agreed to use or like accepted, then that's much easier to say the thing you're trying to say than trying to fight uphill. It's just, I say it's hypocritical because I also disagree with it when it's the opposite of what I want to do and it frustrates me. And then I want to do the opposite and I just wish the world would agree that we can do this other thing instead because that's also what I want to do. That's the frustrating part of it.
It seems like this is kind of a crusade against any frivolity or anything that's unnecessary. Like you keep saying things like, you know, it's not necessary. It's not meaningless. It's kind of just something we do because we've done it. Mm-hmm. But like, what is a really meaningless thing, right? Because these traditions, I don't think are meaningless. I mean, they don't perform the kind of function that you're looking for when you're kind of slicing things up and trying to figure out like what function is it performing.
Well,
what
here's the other difference to society too. When we're both talking about the tree thing, you're talking about it in a way that gives you joy, which doesn't really that's not meaningless for you. That's
kind of where I'm getting
but it
at.
Doesn't give me joy, so meaningless for me. So my point of view is that it seems kind of pointless because I don't enjoy the process of it, and also like, just what would the alien think of this situation? Kind of silly. If those two things go together for me, I'm probably not going to be on board.
Do you think you've talked yourself out of the joy of things like that?
I don't know. Maybe I did when I was a little kid, and I just stuck with it.
While we're talking about me making systems, though, I was reminded today of what was one of my most dominant fantasies growing up as a kid. Not sexual. It's not weird. Don't turn off the podcast. Or don't turn it up either, you creep. Don't do either.
What did you do with that poor tree?
No, so I used to have this... I was raised in going to a Lutheran church quite a bit. I used to go every Sunday and every Wednesday for youth night, and we'd go to multiple services on Sunday. So I spent a lot of time at church, and you know, I was always skeptical and not super into it. And as I got older, I just spent more time just ruminating on how not into it I was, basically. And I had this like daydream for years, and it was really, really fleshed out and kind of thought through, which is that what I thought I would do is that I would devote myself completely to the church. I would, you know, go a whole bunch. I would skip college and go to seminary and become a preacher. You know, I would get to know a congregation. I would, you know, work my way up and maybe become a bishop someday, and then maybe even a cardinal. And then someday I, after 50 years of the long con, would become the Pope. And once I was the Pope, I would have unimpeachable contact with God according to holy doctrine, and then I would simply just tell everybody to stop being dum-dums and get over it. And I would then dismantle the entire Christian religious complex from the inside out. And I would sit in church and just fantasize about this for hours.
Oh, I share this fantasy. This is great. I would hop on board.
Here's the question.
In an instant.
Here's the question.
Except for the 50-year long con. That's pretty tough.
Here's the thing. I thought about this in my head, and here's what I thought. I was like, when I was young, and this is still largely true, I'm not that old now. When I was younger, my main goals were like, I should do something important with my life. Mm-hmm. I should make some kind of impact. And I want to do it that somehow supports the things I believe. And in some ways, I was like, if I had the dedication, this would be the best way to do it, right? Because if you become the Pope and you faked it the whole time, like, you are going down in history. The only fake Pope. Like, that is amazing. And then I would also be able to, like, in that position of what I believe to be probably the most, in some ways, the most supreme power, right? Like, sure, the president is powerful, but the president has checks and balances. Right. You know, if you're the Pope over a certain group of people, supposedly you're the man. You're just, you know, you're in charge.
Doesn't get any more powerful than, I guess, than just being God. Who else supposedly has a more direct line to God?
I think you can make a really good case that the Pope is basically the most powerful person, unimpeachably powerful person on the planet. Anyway, I actually did a lot of reading about how the Pope was selected at the time. I tried to figure out if this was feasible. And I was figuring, like, you know, worst case scenario, I get to write my memoir about the guy that for 35 years tried to fake being the Pope, and then I'll become best-selling author. And that was my backup plan if I couldn't actually achieve papal status.
Very serious plan for a child.
Oh, yeah, I was a very serious, serious young man. So here's the question for you, Matt.
Yeah.
You've done it. Your 67th birthday, you are inducted. The smoke comes out of the chimney. Mm-hmm. The people have chosen. And you are inducted as, you know, the 476th Pope. What do you do?
I don't think I'd come out right away and tell everyone I was lying.
Exactly. You can't do that right away.
You gotta start. You just slowly break down those mm-hmm. traditions that don't make any sense.
Yep.
Like, number one, condoms are great.
Everybody. I was gonna say that. Number one, condoms
are absolutely
great. Hey, I was just talking to God, everybody. He says condoms are super duper, and he basically invented them, so everyone used them all the time.
Yeah, in fact, even with your wife, you're allowed to use them. Anybody. You can use them with anybody. It's a great idea. Use them most of the time.
Can you picture the Pope doing one of those, like, put a condom on a banana demonstrations that, you know, the typical health teacher in middle school does?
No, I can't. But I can imagine me doing that.
That's what you'd do if you were the Pope. You would be at that big old, you'd be on that balcony in over that square. You get that banana out. Oh, okay. So
I do stuff like that.
So you slowly peel back the curtain. Slowly
chip away disassemble everything that is bad about the Catholic Church. You know, like, go ahead and fire, maybe create some sort of Pope jail, put away all the bishops that were diddling children. Mm-hmm. I would do that.
Get rid of those.
Yep. I would probably say
those bishops can move diagonally right to Pope jail.
I would probably say things like, God is cool with gay people. God doesn't care what your race or gender is.
He actually just said gay people are better than regular people. So I don't know what to tell you, everybody. I mean, I wish it wasn't true, but if he told me, I don't know. I can't help it.
So all that sort of stuff. I'm trying to think if I would ever give it away. Would I just keep it to myself the entire time?
Because that's the question. If you give it away, I wonder, if you give it away, I think most people that are really invested are going to be like, well, this is just a sneaky trickster that tricked mm-hmm. us. And all of our beliefs are still A-OK, and this person is just unforgivably bad.
Yep.
So oh, you're right.
I have a really good idea. Have you ever heard that if you renounce the Holy Ghost, you're there, it's just like an unforgivable sin, and you'll go to hell no matter what you do after that point?
I had not heard that particular type of crazy talk.
I'd do something like that. Like, just like, make sure that everybody is all in. We're going to renounce the Holy Ghost together. You told me that's what we're going to do. Everybody's going to do it. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I heard that on the internet. Who knows?
That sounds like a thing you find out at like a sleepover where, exactly, you know, where like Timmy from down the street is like, if you renounce the Holy Ghost, you're going to hell for sure.
Yeah,
I dare you to read this poem.
And then there's like the two kids who are like, I don't believe in that. I'm going to do it. And they're like, oh my God, dude, I can't believe you did that.
And then they get super murdered. Wait, is this a horror movie or is this real
life? No, this is just real life.
Okay.
So anyway, something like that. Let's say that's true. Make sure that everybody is stuck in with you. And then once you've dissolved everything and you get everybody stuck in the buy-in, then you reveal it and be like, that was all a lie and there's no way you can go back. Mm. By the way, wasn't this pretty fun and a good time?
Oh, so you're like leading a service or something and you start sneaking in some words and eventually you just get everyone to repeat some holy gibberish that just means you're going to hell forever.
Basically, yep.
And you say a reverse Hail Mary.
Yeah. And then when that's done,
you say Fail Mary,
guess what happened? I have no connection to God, but you can't go back. You're all going to hell anyway. Turns out it wasn't real, and I just made your lives better.
Guess what? Turns out those are just words.
They might murder me. Maybe the world will be better for it.
Well, then you really go down in the history books.
Yep. So I'll do that more towards the end, not towards the beginning, I would say. But I think by the time you're Pope, it's pretty close to the end anyway.
Yeah. You don't get that early in life.
I do have to say, I like that the Pope, like the current Pope, can just say anything that like has been deemed reasonable in the past 100 years, and he's like praised as the most liberal Pope of all time. I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah, the bar is pretty low.
Yeah, all you could say anything that's like become law or acceptable within society in like 50 years. Just be like super, super late, but be the Pope and then say it. And you're like, wow. Oh my God, this Pope is amazing.
What an amazing Pope.
How did he think of that?
Oh, that's this Pope.
So great. He just accepted someone and like said that they should be granted the same rights as everybody else. That is amazing.
This Pope is almost as good as Trump.
He's almost a very conservative Republican candidate. That is how liberal this Pope is.
Did you see that Trump is probably going to win the New Hampshire and Vermont primaries?
Amazing. That guy is just all he does is say whatever he wants. Here's the trick. He says anything he wants to say and he never apologizes and it just seems fine. Like he's like discovered the trick that the real weakness was apologizing.
Yeah, no one figured that out before him.
Just like, oh no, I did say something sexist. And it was specifically about Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, I said I saw Muslims cheering on 9/11. I stand by that.
Yeah. I stand by it. And then people can't be like, you apologize. You have to go away.
You're a flip-flopper. Which is also terrible that our society's biggest negative, biggest insult is you changed your mind
about something that was wrong.
Yeah. Well, this guy's pretty hateful, but you got to admit he hasn't changed his mind. That's pretty good.
He really sticks to his guns. The issue being guns specifically, assault rifles.
He really sticks to my guns. He sticks for me having the right to have guns.
Like if he, actually, Andy, is he just doing the thing that we just both spoke about? Like what's his way? He's studied the American people. He's like risen to power based on everything he's learned. He is an alien. He's an alien. He put on a mask, like a funny American mask, and studied the behavior of Americans and like found a way to gain power.
He was in the bargain bin in the human mask store.
Through real estate, and he discovered that New York real estate was very profitable.
And by him, I mean, I think you mean his father did all this, right? Didn't he just inherit all this?
Sure. He jumped into the body of a baby or whatever. A well-positioned baby.
Oh, that poor baby.
He studied the American people, lived the life that he thought would lead to power, and now he's just he's turning that back around on everybody and giving everybody what they think they want, and eventually he'll just rip off his president mask and be like, I'm an alien, I've come to destroy Earth.
And I'm the alien, and I'm telling you that condoms are great. Gay people are better than regular people.
It was all a scam. I was just trying to make you better.
Here's the difference. I think to a degree you can buy your way into politics. You cannot buy your way into being the Pope, I don't think. You know what it's important, Matt? I think the important thing is to have a tradition of asking questions about all the traditions.
That's my tradition, Andy.
Raise that up.
That's my tradition.
This has been a real feel-good holiday episode where we have talked more about religion and politics than ever before and possibly alienated people.
That is my stance. What would an alien do? Alienate people.
Right in the name.
Do you really ever ask yourself that question? Because I ask myself that question all the time.
Oh, like legitimately like all the time,
if an alien
yes.
came down to Earth right now and saw this, what would they think?
Oh, I think about that all the time. Nonstop. I think about that at like, I think about it all the time with regards to sports. Wait, mm-hmm. wait a minute. You love sports. Sports is just the dumbest tradition in the whole world.
That's true. I do love sports. That would be the other part of the hypocrisy I was mentioning earlier.
Yes, the other hypocrisy has reared its head.
The thing I was thinking about through the entire episode is Andy's going to be, if he just tries a little tiny bit, I'm sure he'll find some traditions that I really love and I don't want to question.
I was trying, but I forgot about sports, the dumbest traditions of all.
Yeah.
That's when I feel most like an armchair anthropologist and I'm like, look at what these mammals are doing.
Yeah.
They're out there smushing each other over this little ball. This is preposterous. They built this whole stadium and all this infrastructure and these parking lots and everything so they could all gather around this little slab of wood and watch people throw this piece of rubber into a hoop.
I guess it's the same as the tree thing. If it comes down to like, I just enjoy it, then it seems to work okay.
I think I made a little better case than I just enjoy it for my defense of ritual and history.
The tree specifically.
Sure.
You said you just enjoy it.
Well, that's part of it, but also I'd like to mark the passage of time.
Yep.
And I like the idea of just, you know, really sticking it to nature and just taking part of it and putting it in my house on display like a trophy.
I guess I do have, would every Sunday watching football be ritual or tradition?
See, that to me, that's why I liked football for so long. It was just because that shit was on every Sunday morning. There's nothing better than knowing that the thing you love is going to happen at a regular basis and you have some time to look forward to it. And
I'll give you that, Andy. I love that.
And
I love knowing
it's
that Sunday.
A finite number of weeks so you can like map your path through the season, you know, oh, we're mid-season, we're late season, and then you get to look forward to it all summer because you know you have this new ritual coming up. It's just great. It's super good. The same way that, you know, it's the same thing in my brain. And I in high school, I watched so much football, and it was actually, coincidentally, it started as a way for me to get out of church because I was like, ah, I'm really into football. Sorry, it happens to be at the same time. Well, what's going to give? So I was really into football, and it was like the same excitement of knowing that this thing is going to happen on a schedule and I can plan for it and look forward to it is the same thing of like knowing, oh, I'm going to have a tree in my house in December. Like, that'll be fun and great.
I do like
tree times are coming up.
A thing you can look forward to and then like having a consistent thing you can look forward to. That is fun. That's very enjoyable.
I wonder how much it's just catering to my desire for control and just knowing what's going to happen in the world around me. Like, that's part of what it is, right? You know that Sunday morning and afternoon is a known quantity when you are a football fan.
Yep.
And then you get to bitch and whine if somebody makes you go to like a baby shower and you're like, oh, fucking game's on, because that's your ritual. It's being violated.
You get to control your life. No one gets to tell you what to do at that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The world will buy into that, by the way.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I'm allowed to say that and people are like, oh, he likes football. You can't
bother. I have seen grown men weasel their way out of things that children would be mocked for trying to get out of by being like, game's on.
I've established my enjoyment of it enough that I think I can pull that in almost any situation. Pretty good to have.
So really, this your love of sports is just this this trump card in your pocket that you get to pull out to exert control over people.
Maybe it is.
In certain circumstances.
I thought I genuinely enjoyed it, but maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, it turns out you didn't, Matt. That'll be $200 for this psychotherapy session. I just told you didn't enjoy football. That's what you're going to get out of this.
I was watching a game the other day, and I realized, like, I saw a hit happen, and I was like, think this is going to be over soon. You know what I mean? Or like you just see you're just like, there's no way this sport is going to be around in 50
years.
Oh,
you mean like in the world, not in your own mind.
No. I'm still thoroughly enjoying it, but like, I can just see the world being like, no, this doesn't happen.
Being like, yeah, this is just like the Colosseum.
You just see like a parent watching that right then. And they're saying like, my kid's not going to do that. No way. And then you just see the pool of diminishing talent. And then in 50 years, like, no one let their kid play football. They all decide to play soccer. And it's just like a shell of a sport. And
it's just like Canadian football then. Yeah. I had a very similar experience.
I just feel like it's going to happen.
I had a very similar experience with football, but like on a personal level, not like it kind of coincided with the realization that, like, oh, this is just a modern version of, like, gladiatorial games, and mm-hmm. like, people are being maimed out there in very real ways pretty regularly. But at the same time, I have this, like, personal realization where I was like, oh, this doesn't sit right with me anymore on like a weird level. I had that realization with sports, specifically football, and also with like movies with violence and like gore in them. Like, I can't handle a violent movie anymore. I'm like a, you know, I'm like an old person or like a young girl. I can't, like, it just seems so ridiculous to me to like have gratuitous violence in a movie. I'm like, what is this? What is the virtue of this? Why are we doing this?
That doesn't bother me in the least because it's all fake. Like, I actually will get bothered by football injuries, and I don't really know how to square that one away.
Yeah, it's fake blood, but it's real culture. Like, it's a real thing that's being, if not celebrated, at least, like, you know, gawked at and kind of pornographied.
I guess so, but like, I don't feel that way when it's like a story in rap music. Like, I just finished watching Straight Outta Compton last night. Eazy-E is a reporter, Andy. He's not glorifying it, kind of glorifying it, but he's a reporter, just like you. What do you say to that?
I say that is one of my greatest internal conflicts I've never been able to resolve. I do hate violence in movies, and I do love rap that has lots of violence in it, so...
I would say you specifically love not just rap where it's reporting of a place somebody grew up in or like a culture someone grew up in. Like, you like Tyler, the Creator, where it's just like making up violent stuff for absolutely no reason other than to like express teenage angst.
Yeah.
But like the worst kind, I don't know, just like if that came from any other source, I think you'd be screaming about how terrible it is.
Maybe. I hope I've gotten less judgmental, but certainly you can make a very strong case that Odd Future,
like, if you saw a horror movie depicting exactly what he described, you'd be like, I hate Saw movies.
Oh, absolutely. I do hate Saw movies. No, that's what I'm saying. That is a conflict I've had inside of me for a long time, is that, I can't handle, like, I look at violence in movies, and I'm just like, this is preposterous, and doesn't feel good, and I don't like it. And I guess I feel like, I don't like the rap because of the violent imagery, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like it's, in some cases, again, not in the case of Tyler, the Creator, it's an exposure to a world that it would be very convenient for me to completely ignore. And sort of a little bit of voyeurism into a different culture is part of why I really like it. It's like exposure to a different type of way of thinking and a type of person and a different sort of perspective on the world that I just simply did not have growing up in the middle-class suburbs. So I think that that's a part of it, and a part of that world is, you know, there's more violence in inner cities than there is in Westchester, Pennsylvania. So that's kind of something that comes along with it. And I wouldn't be mad at the violence in, like, a, you know, in, like,
documentary film?
Yeah, in, like, a World War II documentary, or even, like, a fictional movie about some historical event that was violent and sort of tells us about the monstrosities that are in each of us. But I don't know. Something about, like, I don't know what it is. It might just be like a reptile brain thing, right? Like, I just might viscerally not
I have to say, I think this is another situation where, like, the tradition of violence in rap makes it seem acceptable to you, and then therefore you're willing to accept it afterwards. Like, I would be willing to bet a lot of what you're listening to isn't necessarily, like, a true depiction of what happened. It's more just the tradition of this is a cool thing to do in rap music, and so we're going to continue it.
Because
you're not listening to NWA usually, or whatever.
No, I listened to it, you know, when I wanted to learn about what NWA was, and then
right, but I don't think that's probably not, yeah, I doubt that's getting regular listens from you. It's probably something more modern
I think for me, like, what I really like about rap, and specifically about Tyler, the Creator, and I think Kanye really falls in his bucket too, is it's people that are really kind of like Tyler. I feel like Tyler's whole thing is, in some ways, at least when he was younger, he's gotten more complicated as he's gotten older, and his later albums are, they don't have the same mass appeal, and they haven't been as successful as far as I can tell, but they're, I think, much better and much more kind of rich and complex, which makes sense, because when he put out his first couple albums, he was, you know, 16 and 18.
Right.
So, you know, not many 16-year-olds are super complex, myself included. So, I think a lot of his early music was specifically about, like you said, teenage angst, and also the fact that the world is so unaccepting of this kind of imagery when it's coming from a young black kid, and is so accepting of it when it is in a major feature movie or when it is in a novel written by an old white guy. But for sort of violent imagery to be present in his music, people, you know, judge him and call him horrible things. And, you know, I think he kind of leaned into that, right? Like, he saw how the world perceived him. And so he kind of went whole hog on committing to that kind of imagery as like almost a form of satire, I think, in some ways. I may be overthinking this completely, but that to me is kind of...
I think his whole, a huge amount of what he constructed is satire in a way. Like,
yeah,
even just like his line of clothing is kind of, I mean, unfortunately, it's kind of what hipster culture has become, where like everything is ironic. But I think a lot of it is ironic and as a mechanism, like a self-defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm. But he also, like, even in his early albums, he's like incredibly introspective. Like, he shares more about how he feels about himself and his own sense of self-worth and his own kind of vision of the world throughout those, you know, violent lines than most musicians share on any other album, than fucking Josh Groban shares on his stupid bullshit albums. Like, it's so intimate. And yes, at the time, I guess he was feeling very angry, and so we get a very intimate view of that anger, but it feels genuine mm-hmm. in a way that I really respond to. And similarly, like, you know, Kanye's music, I think, is extremely intimate to his arrogance. I think he's very arrogant in a way that I have grudging respect for, and also to his kind of sense of wanting to be a creative person. And for me, Kanye's music has always been about this sense of wanting to just create something and sort of have that impact. The kid that did that deserves that May back, and the kid that did that also deserves to become Pope and dismantle religion from the inside out.
If we can run a campaign for you to become Pope, I don't know if we can still do that.
So we can't, like, we can't do it now.
If we release this, kind of yeah. over.
See,
but...
release this, it's all over now. There's no going back. which is actually funny, because something I kind of wanted to talk about, but also been wary to talk about, which is rare for me. But as I have been legitimately thinking that at some point in my life, I would like to run for public office of some sort. Because, you know, we talk all the time about how much I love systems and care about history and tradition and all of these things. And I feel like running a company and sort of being a force inside of a government of some kind or somewhat similar in that you kind of have to exist in a more complex system than you yourself can be responsible for and try and, you know, make compromises and accommodate. And, you know, it's funny because we've joked in the show, I think, where I've said things and I've been like, well, can't run for office now because this is on tape. and now I'm, you know, over the past like year, I've been thinking someday I could see myself very much liking to do that. Not anytime soon, but, you know, at some point.
I have thought that at some point, like in 10, 20, maybe 30 years, we're going to have some sort of like mutually assured destruction clause in all, like, or I don't know, clause, like, agreement, general agreement in politics, because
everyone's
going to
have
documented
a huge trail of their Facebook posts.
And no one is actually the human being that we think previous presidents were. So
that could actually be an amazing moment
where people just get to have, you know, it's, I mean, like, I listen to the Dan Savage podcast and he talks about this sometimes, but like the idea that right now people have to have like two different identities. They're like, he usually talks about it in like their sexual identity online and then their like Facebook profile that their mom sees. But I think there's more to, I think there's more than that in your, like, your online identity, whether it be like your politics, the way you really feel about something. Maybe it's just like even as simple as like, you have a profile that's like for bike parts and you have a profile that's your Twitter profile. You're not really the same person on all those things. But once the tools get better where things are more aggregated, maybe we have the same accounts, maybe it's pretty easy to like attach one person to all their different online identities. Well, then either everyone is fucked or everyone just has to agree that this is what it's like to be a human being and we're all more honest. I don't know which is, I think there's a period of time where everyone's fucked for a while first and then we have to agree that this is what it's like to be a human being.
Well, there might be a period of time where people that are older are advantaged because they may not be fucked because they didn't go through college when there was Facebook. So they have a little bit of an edge over the younger sort of public figures or political candidates.
Well, that would be right now. But I think the thing we're finding is that those people
that wouldn't
are,
be right now,
are,
though.
Are making their way into the technology and sending dick pics, not using Snapchat or whatever.
But they really wouldn't be right now. You have to be, what, 35 to be president of the United States? Nobody that's 35 had Facebook in college. So it's not even possible for a candidate to be young enough that that would have been a thing where, like, you know, they would have their dick pics from college somewhere.
We're quickly approaching the point where, like...
Yeah, I think it's coming.
It's coming and going very fast.
There's really two ways that can go. One way is the way you describe, which, frankly, I think is beautiful. Like, if we could just get to the point where it's like, yeah, I was 21. I wouldn't want 21-year-old me to be president, but guess what? I'm not 21 anymore. Now I'm 39. So I was a child, and now I'm a man, or whatever.
Kind of eliminates the idea of a flip-flopper, because everyone was a flip-flopper.
Yeah, but how beautiful if we could actually come to terms with that, instead of having to be like, did you inhale the pot, sir? No, I did not inhale. Like, yep. You know, that's so crazy. So that's one option. The other option is maybe we'll just get way better at hiding ourselves, and the internet will become just as clandestine as the real world is. Seems like it might be impossible, but also it seems like maybe it's not impossible.
See, I think the thing that's nice about the internet is that, I mean, there are services that do that, like, what is it, like reputation.com. I saw one on Shark Tank. It made me laugh, where their whole thing is just like, they create new pages for you, so they push your rankings down. Like, even
that's
the
way to do it.
They admit, like, they can't really erase anything.
Gotta
they can
bury
just
it.
Push things out of the way.
Gotta so, bury it.
So there's nobody has any really good way of doing it. But I think those
that's the thing. We just have to keep recording.
I think those are actually a little bit reprehensible. Like this, I understand why they exist, and there are certainly good reasons why people use them. But it's just a lie about the way things are. And the sooner we can just accept the way things are, which maybe it's just a reflection of the way things always should have been. We should have never been we shouldn't have been keeping so many secrets. We shouldn't have been lying about who we are so much. Like, it's just
we should just really get rid of all those traditions. That change won't be a smooth one, though. Like, no. Our entire society is built on that. It's not like we can just flip the switch and be like, oh, we'll just stop lying now. Everybody smoked pot in college.
I don't know. I think it will be a specifically difficult one when it becomes about, like, sexuality and those things that make everybody uncomfortable.
Everyone sent dick pics received dick pics or sent the female version of dick pics. I don't know what that would be. It's not a clever term. Basically, we just have to keep recording podcasts to bury all the episodes of the podcast, so that if I do have a run for public office, the muckrakers will have 600 hours of podcasts to do, and they'll just give up. And they'll say, we can't do it. There's no muck to be raked.
Thank God. Yeah, they'll never come out with tools that can just scrub audio for transcripts.
No, that's not going to be possible.
Command F, dick pic. Oh, he said dick pic 172 times in this episode. He's done. He can't be comptroller.
Comptroller can't say dick pic? I think the comptroller can say dick pic. The comptroller can say dick pic would be quite a title for this episode. I don't think anybody would know what that was about. We should end, because you should be able to edit this in a reasonable amount of time.
Okay, that sounds fine. How are we ever going to find the episode where Andy, the guy running for comptroller, says dick pic? Oh, it's the title of the episode. Comptroller says dick pic.
It's Can the Comptroller Say Dick Pic? Featuring Andy Mangold.
One thing I like about the tradition Thanksgiving is going home and seeing my family, of course. I actually do love turkey, despite you hating turkey.
National Dog Show.
Does that happen over Thanksgiving?
Yeah, that's my favorite Thanksgiving thing, National Dog Show.
I like football over Thanksgiving. That's also nice. But maybe not better. Just as good. I haven't ever paid for cable in my whole life, and I get access to my parents' cable and their DVR and all the things that I'm amazed exist in the world that are not on Hulu or Netflix. And I got to go back and watch one of my favorite shows that has a new season. And I kind of forgot about it existing, but it's called Nathan for You. And it's have you ever seen this, Andy?
I've never even heard of it, Matt.
Oh, good. It's a show on Comedy Central, and it is a business prank show.
I love that already.
It's a guy named Nathan. And a guy named Nathan Fielder, who every episode he films himself either going to one or two businesses and pitching an idea to them to help them solve some problem that they have, or him starting his own business. I think you probably know him best from Dumb Starbucks. Are you aware of Dumb Starbucks?
I think you told me about dumb Starbucks at some
point. I hope I did, because it's a great idea. One of his ideas was he wanted to use the Starbucks name and trademark, logo, whatever. But without, of course, if you just steal the Starbucks trademark, you're going to get sued. But there is such a thing as parody law, so you can you can create a trademark that is making fun of the Starbucks logo. So he founded Dumb Starbucks in an art gallery, where he's allowed to, like, in an art gallery, you're allowed to sell beverages and stuff as long as you don't have a kitchen. So he just sells coffee in his art gallery, and he calls it Dumb Starbucks, and he uses the logo exactly as is, just with the word dumb attached to it. That was one great prank. My other favorite one is he wanted to assist a party planner, and his great idea was to create an app that invites people. Like, you can put your full invitation list, and you can sort whether it's going to go into their spam box or into their inbox, so that if anyone is upset that they didn't get invited to the party, you can say, oh, did you check your spam filter? And it's just an app that, once you send the invite, at the bottom of it in white text in like 1-point font, it adds like Viagra, 10-inch penis, 9-inch penis, 8-inch penis, so on and so forth. So it automatically gets picked up as spam. But nobody gets mad when you didn't invite them because they didn't check their spam folder. So these, like, absolutely absurd ideas that I think hypothetically could help a business, but they're just so absurd no one would ever try them. But he has the most deadpan delivery. Like, the joy of it is that, like, I don't think he's ever smiled delivering one of his ideas. Anyway, if you don't enjoy this, I think this is the best comedy on TV right now. Fantastic. Nathan, for you. I think you can find it on Hulu, even.
You can edit out the part at the beginning where you said it's not on Hulu.
Not the latest season isn't on Hulu. So I went home and I watched the latest season. You can go on Hulu and find season 1 and 2. But what do you care? You've never seen it before.
It's true.
So go watch the first 2 seasons. I've seen it all.
I know. We just watched the 5th season of Great British Bake Off. That's right in the middle. It's not the beginning. It's not the latest. It's just a random season right in the middle.
That's right. It's very frustrating. I am a completist. I need to see everything from the beginning to the end. I'm not going to start in the middle.
I feel that way,
like,
too.
Like a monster.
I like that tradition of completing things. It's good.
Not a tradition. It's a disability.
It's a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
This has been On the Grid, episode 144. This week, I want you to go to iTunes, search for On the Grid, and give us a nice review. Give us 5 stars and tell us what you like about the show. Go to iTunes, search for On the Grid, give us a nice review. Thanks to Dan for the interlude music, Girlfriends for the theme music, and finally, thanks to you for listening. Until next week.